Hormones are constantly in flux, so you can't really balance your hormones. I see a lot of like what I eat in a day to balance my hormones, and I'm just like, oh.
But what if I told you that I have a medicine that can reduce the risk of not just one, but all of these diseases? Would you believe me?
Dr. Hazel Wallace, registered nutritionist, best-selling author, and the founder of Food Medic.
I lost my dad when I was 14, so that was like the most significant thing of my childhood, which is why I do what I do today.
You can't swallow it in a pill, and it's not surgery. Have you guessed?
Women are very different on a physiological level. Our bodies just work slightly differently.
Most influencers and fitness guys who look great, most of them probably are doing something. I say this repeatedly, like I've never touched anything. But it's when people say, oh, you're lying to people.
Yeah.
That's what pisses me off.
The most impactful thing for my health is...
What's up, guys, and welcome back to First Things First. I'm joined with special guest, Dr. Hazel Wallace.
Thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Not too bad. Where are you from originally?
If you haven't guessed from the accent, I'm Irish. So from a place called Dundalk, which is north of Dublin. It's not like a super well-known or special place, but it's where I grew up.
Good upbringing?
Yeah. Yeah, I am, I guess, like very traditional upbringing, like classic Irish household. I lost my dad when I was 14, so that was like the most significant thing of my childhood, which I'm sure we'll get into, but is why I do what I do today, why I'm interested in nutrition, why I'm interested in health. Yeah.
Did you get into that when you were in your teens or later on in your 20s? Did you go to university?
Yeah, I went to university. So we lost dad when I was 14 and he had a stroke while we were having dinner. And so at that age, I wasn't really thinking, what am I going to do with my life? I was just kind of navigating being a teenage girl. And then later, as we were like starting to decide, like, where we're going to apply for university, I thought to myself, like, I want to be a doctor. I want to prevent this from happening to other families. Mm-hmm. And like a stroke is largely, like the risk factors are largely related to our lifestyle, like the food that we eat, our stress levels, exercise. And I was kind of thinking that in medical school, I'd learn all about that and how we could prevent this from happening. And I don't know if you know much about kind of the medical school curriculum when it comes to nutrition, but there's really not anything.
Yeah, well, if it's anything like the personal training certification that I had to do, it's extremely basic and doesn't really prepare you for the real world.
Well, that's it. I've trained as a PT as well, and I would say there's more in a PT qualification than there is in medicine.
What did you do for yours? Was it like level 2 and 3?
Level 2 and 3. Yeah. I PT'd people at uni to like earn money. And also I had this dream as when I would be a doctor that I'd be this like all-encompassing holistic doctor who like, you know, gives you nutrition advice, trains you. Mm. That's not really the case, but that was the dream. So anyway, I became really interested in nutrition. Went to medical school in Cardiff, and at the time I realised we're just paying lip service to the importance of nutrition. We're not actually learning how to apply this for our patients. And like these days, majority of the diseases that we die from are things that are largely related to our lifestyles and in like to a degree can be prevented, like heart disease, stroke, some forms of cancer. And so I started a blog then at the time called The Food Medic, and that was 12 years ago, to talk about the link between nutrition and our health. Went through medical school and moved to London and started working as a doctor in the NHS. And I wrote my first book that year as well. And then after working for a few years in the NHS, I went back and trained as a nutritionist because...
people working in the NHS... I wouldn't say they are entirely clued up when it comes to nutrition.
They're not. And I mean, we have dietitians, but they're kind of allocated to very specific situations. You know, like someone's post-op, they've had gut surgery, they need support after that. Or someone is going through cancer treatment, they need support. Or someone's malnourished. Mm. But for like individuals who are coming through, I would say like 90% of people do need some form of nutrition counselling. And they trust their doctors to give them that advice. But many doctors just don't have the training to give you that advice, which is kind of such a missing piece, I think.
It's so strange, especially when there's patients that have had surgery. Like my dad's just been in hospital. He's had a triple bypass.
Wow.
And he's been stuck there for a while. And he's just been like telling me the types of food that he's been having, because he's not allowed to leave. So he has to eat what he's been given. It's just this highly processed food, you know, it's like jam on toast kind of thing for breakfast, which is really, I mean, in my opinion, it's pretty shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I think like obviously you're working on a large scale and you're working within NHS funding, which is limited. But when you think about it, you know, we should be giving patients food that's going to support their recovery. Like, and I think that part is overlooked, or it's considered not the most important place to allocate funding when nutrition is incredibly important for recovery, our immune system, like our ability to regenerate tissue. It's like incredibly important.
Mm. Do you think people are becoming more aware of what they should be eating? Or do you think the situation is just a whole giant mess where everyone's just at a point where they're confused because there's so many conflicting pieces of information that says, oh, you should eat this or you shouldn't eat that? Like, I know there's on social media, these reels will pop up of people saying, oh, oats are bad for you, or like this type of milk is bad for you. And even I'm just thinking, this, if I was to take advice from every single influential nutritionist or doctor on social media, I would be extremely confused.
Yeah.
And wouldn't really know what to do.
I agree with you. I think it's really difficult because I think most people know general nutrition advice, but it's not new. It's not sexy. It's very basic. There's no like one kind of magic pill that you can take that will solve things, or one specific dietary regime that's going to work for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's very simple, but that doesn't get views or clicks on social media. And so people have agendas. And I think, you know, on with social media, there's it's very easy for misinformation to spread quickly. And if you have like doctor or RD or whatever the title is behind your name, people are going to trust that. And not to throw like any peers under the bus, but like, there's so many very big US-based doctors who give very extreme dietary advice, be that like carnivore diet, or they will, you know, be big kind of.
Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it. That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode. So like taking out an entire macronutrient group or going extended periods of time with not eating anything or just having a liquid-only diet.
That's
just like ridiculous things.
That's it. Or like go into podcasts and say like, you know, calories don't count and make big statements like that. Or, you know, the most recent one that went viral is, you know, Coca-Cola is better than orange juice for you because of the sugar in orange juice. I'm like, how can you actually go on a podcast and say that? And like, you have a medical degree. So I think a lot of it's just like clickbait for likes. But also, I think people are getting more confused by all of that information. I see people in clinic and I see women exclusively who are coming in with specific conditions like PCOS. And
what's that?
Polycystic ovary syndrome. Okay. So it's like a hormonal condition. And they, our conversations are almost the same with everyone. Like, I'm confused whether I need to cut carbs, whether I need to be increasing omega-3s, whether I need to try fasting. Like, because there's so much like noise around diets and the best diet, because the information is just so simple. It is like, ensure that you're having a healthy, balanced diet, getting enough protein, complex carbohydrates, healthy fats, try not to have too much salt or saturated fat. Like, that doesn't sound interesting. That's not going to go viral.
I always say to people, your shopping basket should look colorful.
Yeah.
When it comes to buying the fruits and the vegetables, just have as much variety as possible.
That's it.
The more variety you have in your diet, the less likely it is that you're going to be deficient.
Well, yeah, that's it. Absolutely. And majority of people don't need to take supplements if they're following that rule. Mm. Like, there is kind of more niche circumstances. Like in the UK, we don't get vitamin D, so supplement with that. Or if you have like specific nutritional needs, and we were discussing that, like, check, get a blood test, like check with a nutritionist or a dietitian before just like blindly going out there and supplementing because you've seen that so-and-so's taking it on social media. I think where we're going with nutrition is we're moving more and more away from whole foods and moving more towards processed foods and supplements to try and make up what we think is a good diet.
Or even like the packaging that says high protein.
Yeah. And like you, like
it's just pure processed protein.
Well, yeah, for sure. Or it will be like 10 grams of protein, but like majority of the stuff in there is actually like very heavily processed or another macronutrient, but just because it's got enough protein to qualify for that statement, it can put it on the bar.
And the majority of the time it'll say on the packaging, warning, if consumed in excess may cause
laxative effects. Yeah.
So that's usually not a good sign if that's on a product.
Yeah, that's it. And I think if you're finding that your majority of your diet or you're bulking out your diet every day with things like protein supplements, I would kind of go back to the original thing, like look at your shopping basket and think, how can I actually optimize my diet this way? Mm. I'm very much a big fan of a food first approach because protein supplements are great, they're convenient and they're helpful. I'm not against them, but you can't like replicate what you can get protein from a whole food diet. You get so many other nutrients in there because it comes packaged in this kind of food complex with vitamins and minerals and in some case like fiber or other nutrients. Whereas a protein supplement is just protein and it's processed and it could have other additives that don't agree with you.
Yeah. Mm. What do you think people can do is like a simple, quick fix for them to understand what foods they should be avoiding or consuming more of? Like, do you think people should be having a food intolerance test? Do you think they're legit? Maybe like a DNA test?
I think most food intolerance tests, apart from lactose intolerance, are not validated. So don't waste your money.
Why do you think that?
I know that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a fact. It's because what we're testing in the blood is actually not it. That what it picks up is not telling you that you're intolerant to that. It could just be picking up the fact that you've consumed that particular food recently. Allergy testing, which is like when you actually have kind of your immune system's reacting to it, those tests are validated. So say you've got a peanut allergy. That is legit testing. But things like wheat intolerance, fructose intolerance and things like that, they're a lot harder to figure out. And the best way to figure it out is a food exclusion. So what you would do is just exclude it from your diet and see how you respond. And that should be done with a nutritionist or a dietitian.
That's really down to you as an individual being very self-aware and understanding or asking yourself, how do I feel after I consume this?
Yeah.
And most people don't realize, you know, if they are feeling really tired or super bloated, or maybe they start to get a rash or spots, they seem to be unable to link it to the foods that they've consumed. They just kind of accept that that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And then they just continue to consume those foods.
Yeah, that's it. And I think if you are consuming information that's saying gluten's bad for you or oat milk's bad for you, then when you consume that, you almost have this like effect on your brain that, oh, maybe because I had that bread, I actually am bloated now, as opposed to the fact that you're not taking into consideration that, you know, you're just about to come on your period or you've actually had a big protein shake and you don't agree with whey. Like, there's so many other things. And I think it's really easy that when something goes wrong, especially if we feel bloated or something like that, that it's like easy to villainize a particular food group.
Mm-hmm.
And it is confusing. I know it's complicated because I've people come to me and they're like, adamant that this is one food they cannot have, and yet there's not really much proof, so we have to like really untangle that and then reintroduce it and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to navigate, but like if you know for sure that a food is not agreeing with you, you don't necessarily need to have an intolerance test. You can just not include it in your diet and figure out, you know, if it is a big food group, make sure that you are getting the nutrients from that food group in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a particular approach to your diet and what you eat?
I'm like very kind of all foods fit type mm-hmm. person. I've gone through phases where I was vegan, where I was vegetarian. I'm mostly like fish, chicken diet and veggies. But because of like my own health, I make sure that like every couple of weeks I'm having red meat, I'm having oily fish twice a week. Like, I'm conscious of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that actually a lot of like freedom comes with not having a very specific regime and understanding that, you know, if I do have like a croissant this morning, which I do on a Saturday because it's something me and my partner do, that that's not going to undo the other healthy things I did that week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the all or nothing mindset when it comes to nutrition can actually be quite harmful in that way.
Yeah. When I mean, I have guys come to me and they're like, oh, I'm thinking of doing the keto diet. I'm just like, why do you want to put yourself through that?
Yeah.
Like, do you know how much of a pain in the ass that's going to be to try and stick to? Even if I was trying to do it myself, and I like to eat out a lot sometimes, I would have to be so particular with what I'm choosing on the menu and so many things I would have to say no to that it would... The quality of my life would go downhill trying to stick to that. So there's no point.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to be, what's the word?
Consistent.
Consistent with that in the long run, which is what you really need to be in order to get the results.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I mean, have you gone through a phase with your diet where you've tried specific dietary regimes like that?
I tried vegan once. For a week. And then I realized that to follow that and enjoy it, you really need to know what foods to buy and how to prep it.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, I would need a great vegan chef to prepare these meals for me. And I would actually really enjoy it. I did feel good. But I tried, you know, the sort of the fake meat.
Yeah.
And that did not make me feel good.
No.
So it was an interesting experiment. But again, I didn't feel like I needed to be that restrictive. Like I the things which I really missed when I followed the vegan diet was eggs and fish.
Yeah.
Like I like my eggs and my fish. I could probably live without meat.
Yeah.
But to exclude those two things, it was too much. And for me, being somebody who I'm trying to hit around 200 to 220 grams of protein, that's really hard to do from plants alone.
It really is.
'Cause you get like with that protein comes either high fats or high carbs or both.
Yeah. And then you get so full mm-hmm. from like all the fiber as well. That is a challenge.
Extremely gassy period of time.
Yes. But then, you know, there's so many vegan bodybuilders now and I'm like, oh, kudos to you because that must be really, you have to be so meticulous. You have to plan ahead. Like when I'm working with clients and they're vegan, like it is a challenge to ensure that they are getting enough protein and they're not just having super kind of high fat, high carb diets because they tend to, especially when they're really busy, then opt for processed meats and kind of like vegan ready meals. And I think sometimes there's the assumption that if it is vegan or plant-based, then it's like therefore healthy. Mm. And while a vegan diet can be incredibly healthy, it's like, it's no better than any other diet. It really depends on what you make up in that diet. Like, are you getting all your protein needs? Are you getting your omega-3s? All
yeah. That? From my experience and the people I know who've tried to go vegan is that they're not well-educated enough about nutrition. So when they do consume plant-based foods, they're not getting that variety of micronutrients and even the essential amino acids to the point where they get ill on a regular basis, or they just generally don't look healthy.
Mm.
And that's just because they're consuming a lot of processed vegan foods, which is actually doing them more harm than good.
Yeah.
So again, it just comes down to lack of education.
Well, that's it. And I think, like, for maybe like 3 years ago, there was a lot of pressure around like people going vegan. It was like really popular. And there was a lot of conversation about the impact of meat on the environment. And I think for that reason, a lot of people changed their diet and then realized, actually, this isn't really working for me. And I like really think it's admirable for people to change their diet because they're conscious of the impact on the environment. But there's so many other things you can do than like put yourself on a restrictive diet that isn't serving you to help the planet. Like, you can just reduce your meat slightly. You can think about like reducing how much you're flying, like not buying plastic, those kind of things. Whereas I think some people tie themselves up in knots because they think they should be doing this specific thing.
Yeah. Very quickly, guys, I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you taking supplements? And if you are, do you have any idea if you're taking the right supplements in the right amounts? You see, the more that I discovered about the importance of micronutrient supplementation and the adverse health effects of micronutrient deficiencies, I would constantly ask myself the same thing. I would go into supplement stores, load up on bottles of micronutrients and pop pills daily without really knowing if they were doing me any good or not. That's when I decided to try out Bionic. Since 2021, I've been getting my blood work done with them every 3 to 4 months. And once the blood test has been analyzed, they would put together a customized micronutrient formula tailored specifically for me. And this would last me for 3 to 4 months until I got my blood work done again. And since then, I've honestly never looked back. If you are also serious about performing at your best, preventing development of diseases and maximizing your overall health and well-being, I highly recommend you give it a try. And they've recently introduced Bionic Go, which is a fraction of the price, where all you need to do is just fill in a questionnaire online without the need of a blood test. If you want to find out more or give them a try, head over to bionic.com, and you can use my exclusive referral code BQMikeThurston for a discount on your first order. Let's get back to the episode. What do you find most, I imagine most people who come up to you asking advice or questions, they're females, am I right in thinking that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the common questions that you're getting asked?
Well, I mean, you probably know this yourself. Like, I feel like the diet industry does target men, but like largely targets women. So like from teenage years, you're kind of growing up and you're like exposed to magazines and things that talk about women's bodies and how they need to be smaller and X, Y, and Z. So a lot of what women come to me with is body image issues, a lot of kind of disordered habits around food. But more recently, because my last book, The Female Factor, was all on women's health, they come to me about issues with their menstrual cycle, PCOS, like I mentioned, polycystic ovary syndrome, endometriosis, which is another women's health condition. They're the kind of main concerns, because for a very long time, we kind of just assumed women are small men, and we've not really done as much research in women as we have in men. Men have always been the kind of default subject or that you would use in studies up until like the last 2 decades, really. And so what we're finding now is actually women are very different on a physiological level. Like, obviously, we've got very different hormonal patterns, and our bodies just work slightly differently. So when it comes to things like nutrition and training and sleep and stress, we also have that like influence of the menstrual cycle, or after the menopause, you've got really low hormones, or through postpartum and pregnancy, your hormones change again. And now we're only starting to understand how impactful that is. So a lot of what I do is around like teaching women what's happening across the menstrual cycle, how that influences your metabolism, your cravings, your sleep, your stress levels. Mm. And so that's kind of a huge area of work that I'm in now and trying to raise awareness around that. It's really fascinating once you kind of dive into it.
I would say it's definitely not an area of expertise for me, but it's quite interesting because I was thinking about it. I have my training app, and there's lots of people who use that app. It's predominantly focused for men and male training programs, although recently I've started to make some female-only training programs because I had some women who were just saying, hey, like, I love your app. I've been doing all your workouts. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, like, women shouldn't really be doing those workouts because they were, in terms of the volume, there was the weekly volume was probably more than a woman should be doing. And then the exercise selection, again, was more catered towards men. Like, I probably wouldn't have women doing, you know, shrugs or like too much upper body stuff. So I think it is important when it comes to women and what type of exercises they should be doing and how much they should be doing in terms of volume. Because like you said, with the menstrual cycle, there'll be certain times when, okay, you're stronger here, your recovery is going to be better, so you can do more volume or you can push yourself further. Whereas when you're actually on your period, then this is where you'd need to be doing less or resting.
Yeah. Like,
what have you found when it comes to the menstrual cycle? How should you change and alter your training programming?
Yeah, this is really important to cover because this is another thing that's like all over social media right now and a lot of people are getting it wrong. But when it comes to women and men training, like in general, women can do whatever men are doing. Like, I've got no issue with that. There's nothing on a kind of physiological level that's stopping them. Like, there are some kind of advantages that men have. Like, you've got a bigger heart, bigger lungs. Your cardiovascular system's like more adapted to train and train harder. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean women can't. Like, they've got some certain advantages as well. Like, women are slightly better when it comes to certain endurance sports, like things like swimming, because of how we carry our body fat. And also the differences in our muscle fibers. It seems that we're able to go longer, harder for longer versus men who are typically built for more like power movements. So if a woman wants to do shrugs, like, I'm all for it. Like, you do you, hun. When it comes to the menstrual cycle, so just kind of for a brief overview for everyone listening, typically it's a 28-day cycle. Most of us only ever talk about the first 5 days, which is the period. But for the remaining 23 days or so, your hormones are still fluctuating. So a lot's happening. They're like going up and down. And so estrogen and progesterone, which are the main hormones, not only dictate like when you're going to reproduce and how fertile you are, but also your like strength and energy levels. So when they're low in the menstrual phase during your period, you're typically like not feeling as strong. And we see that in the research that there's a slight dip in performance in terms of strength and endurance, like really small. And I always say, like, you know, it's so variable from woman to woman. Like, some women say to me, I actually feel great during that time. I felt worse the week before. So it's really individual. Then after that phase, estrogen rises and it peaks just before ovulation. And that's typically when women feel the strongest because estrogen is just incredibly powerful when it comes to muscle building potential. So you'll see like people talk about this on social media and they'll say like, that's the time to go for your PBs. But again, you have to take into consideration like how you slept that week, what your diet's like, all those other factors. Then into the next phase after ovulation, progesterone increases, and alongside that, estrogen is high again. You start retaining water. You're starting to become premenstrual towards your next cycle, and then you might feel like you're not feeling as energetic again. So what I've been seeing on social media is that like there's a lot of cookie cutter menstrual cycle phase programs, and they're like, week one, do yoga because you're on your period. Week two, lift weights. Week three, do something gentle. Week four, do something gentle. I'm like, I'm all for listening to your body, but if we're only lifting 1 week out of four, like, we're never going to make any progress.
Yeah.
And strength training is so incredibly important for women because of their bone health. Even like muscle strength, independence, like all the benefits that men get as well, that I worry if we're like, you know, that prescriptive, that we're actually going to hold ourselves back. Mm-hmm. But I think if you track your cycle, you understand how it makes you feel, then maybe you drop the volume the week of your period. You might reduce the weight slightly or reduce the size of your set, like thinking about those things, but not having it in your head, oh, I'm on my period, so I can only do yoga, or my period's coming next week, so I can only do Pilates.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's like people, you know, when they have the whoop and then they wake up in the morning, maybe they got red, so they're like, well, today we're doing nothing. Like, I'm not going to do any work, I'm not going to train. It's a day of recovery.
Yeah.
But sometimes you should just do what you were going to do anyway.
You have to take it with a pinch of salt. But Whoop is actually, they include a menstrual cycle function now in their app. So you can track your cycle and then that will influence your strain.
Okay.
Or like projected strain. That's like something that I've worked on with Whoop. So it's really interesting because we're able to like track all the metrics now across the menstrual cycle. So we see like your HRV drops like as you go through your cycle and your heart rate increases. And it's like so interesting seeing it go up and down. It's like just really dictates the power of the menstrual cycle that we've not really understood before.
But how long would that last for? The effect on the HRV, would it be like 5 days or?
It's like it's very individual. So like I looked at my last month and I seen like it really trending upwards, like almost perfectly as my cycle went through. And then on day one of my next cycle, my heart rate like came back down low to like my normal resting heart rate. And I was like comparing it to my partner's who he's just started using Whoop. And it's just so interesting how men's like variables are a lot more stagnant and consistent.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really powerful knowing that because you could be like seeing that and thinking, I'm like working my ass off in the gym and I think I'm really fit, but my heart rate has actually changed again. Or like, my recovery isn't as good. But if you understand, right, well, it's because I'm at this point in my cycle, it's a really important factor to take into consideration.
What's your thoughts on birth control?
What in specific about birth control?
Well, the one that's, okay, so the birth control where it's preventing you from having your period. I've heard mixed things, not only in the physical appearance, like it can cause women to actually retain more weight or have like bigger breasts. But is there also some health disadvantages to actually having that? This is something I'm curious to know. Like, I've had partners in the past who've been taking the pill, and then obviously any future partners I have, like I kind of want to know more about it so I can advise them what they should and shouldn't do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now there's like quite a movement against hormonal contraception. I think a lot of women are trying to become, I guess, they want to feel more natural when it comes to what they're putting into their bodies. And look, if you're putting anything into your body, be that supplement or a medication, or you've got like a injection, whatever it is, there is going to be side effects to that. And like, that's just true. And I'm not going to deny that. So when it comes to birth control or hormonal contraception, we'll just kind of leave the non-hormonal forms aside because they're not going to have any effects on you. There's different forms. Some of them are estrogen, progesterone. Some of them are progesterone only. You can take it in a pill. Some of them, like you can put a little implant in your arm. You can get a coil in your womb. There's various ways that you can take it. So they all work in different ways. So they have different side effects.
Mm-hmm.
The most like common form is the pill. That's the combined pill with estrogen, progesterone. And what that does is it just creates a more stable environment. So you take the pill every day and then you stop taking it for 1 week and you have a withdrawal bleed. We've got loads of research from that for years. It's probably the most researched form of contraception. And there are risks to taking that and side effects, but they are quite small. And every woman who goes on it will be counseled on potential risks. I do think that there is a lot, I don't think women are fully informed as much as they could be about that. And I think what I find is when it comes to mood in particular, some women find that on certain forms of contraception, it impacts their mood. And because the data isn't really robust, they might go to their health professional and they're like, no, it's just in your head. Like, it's not the pill. Mm. Whereas I think like we're doing a disservice by saying that. I think we need more research around that. And we also need women to... We need to like listen to women and their concerns. So there's a lot more like websites coming up where you can actually like self-report your symptoms, post reviews of contraception. And they're run by like organizations where there's one called The Lowdown, where you can like post reviews of contraception, share like how you got on with it, like both positive and negative. And like hundreds of women are using that now. So they feel more like they're able to find what works for them. Mm-hmm. What I don't want is to create like this like fear around contraception that it's really harmful and you should all, that everyone should come off it, because it's allowed women to like, you know, really progress in their careers and carry on with normal life. Because some women would take the pill not for contraception, but because they've got really heavy periods, for example, it helps them manage that. Mm. And so there's different like reasons why women will do certain things.
Yeah, why is it that some women suffer so much on the other period?
We don't really know. Like when it comes to PMS, which is premenstrual syndrome, like 90% of women report symptoms in that phase. But some women get it so bad that it like impacts their like day-to-day life. They can't go to work, or, you know, they can't go to the gym, that kind of thing. And when we look at hormone levels in women who experience it versus those who don't, there's no difference. So we think that some women are more sensitive to that drop off in hormones before the next cycle. But in studies looking at like the link between the menstrual cycle and mood, they found that actually a stronger predictor of your mood is not your menstrual cycle, but actually your support system. So women who are in like a healthy, supportive relationship seem to be less likely to have PMS. Mm. So there's loads of other factors. And like also your physical symptoms. So if you're someone who really struggles with like bloating, tender breasts, that kind of thing, you're more likely to experience PMS because you're not feeling physically very good.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just me, but do you feel as though more women are taking steroids these days?
Steroids in general?
Steroids to improve their physique.
To be honest, I feel like I can't comment on this because I'm not really in that space. Yeah. It's not something I've come across, but I'm interested to know from you.
I mean, being in Dubai and obviously training at some of the serious hardcore bodybuilding gyms, there's women there that are bigger than me.
Really?
Like there's some huge women, and they just seem to be recklessly taking anything and everything to achieve this physique, which for whatever reason they want to achieve. And I just don't know why they're doing it, because not only is it, it's literally, it's changing the structure of their face, they're getting the deep manly voice as well. And I mean, of course, doing steroids as a whole is generally not going to be good for you, but I don't understand like why a lot of these women are doing it. I don't know if it's becoming like more acceptable, or if there's more of a trend in the bodybuilding world for women to look like that. I just don't really understand why they're taking it, why they're so reckless about doing it and not thinking about the consequences.
Is it from like they're competing, or they're just like everyday athletes who are doing it from a...
I think both. I think particularly there's some women who are complaining about not being as lean as they want to be. You know, they want to be more toned. They want to have the abdominal definition, which for a woman to achieve is difficult, because I mean you need to be in the low ends of body fat percentage.
Yeah.
And for a woman to be under 10% is like, that's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, especially for your fertility.
So they're taking anything to help them kind of maintain this low body fat percentage and not realizing the damage it's going to be doing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why that's become like more popular. It's definitely not something I've observed in London, but I imagine it's because like there is a big bodybuilding community in Dubai. Mm-hmm. And if it's become something that like within that community a lot of people are doing, then perhaps it's just become acceptable. But I think, like, men have been doing it for years. And what's the difference between a man and a woman doing it?
I think there's some very reckless personal trainers as well.
Really?
Who are, like, advising them to take it, yeah. And I just think that is so irresponsible.
It's so irresponsible. It's so shocking as well that, like, that's the like, lengths that we feel like we need to go to have a certain physique. But, like, you know, is steroid taking any different to people going on, like, really extreme dieting and, you know, these excessive exercise regimes to get to a certain state? I guess it is because it's invasive, but I feel like it's so problematic when you step back and just think about it. Like, what is this offering you in the grand scheme of things versus the risk that you're taking upon yourself?
From your experience, like, what would you advise the average woman to be consuming in terms of the average calorie consumption?
It's so variable. Like, you know, the standard, like, I think we say in the UK, like, 2,000 calories and 2,500 calories for a man. But, like, I would consume 2,500 calories on any given day based on my own needs. So I think I personally, what I find with women who come to me are consuming far too little. And some of them may be finding that they're actually in a higher body weight and they're unable to lose weight. But they've been so restrictive for years that they're unable to shift it. And what you find is actually when you increase their energy intake, they take on more calories, they start losing weight, and it just, like, blows their mind. So I think I'm not a big, you know, fan of counting calories or counting macros. I think it has a place for certain individuals, but for the majority of people, they don't need to worry about it. I think what people need to focus on more is, like, the quality of their diet and making sure they're, like, getting in enough nutrients, because typically, like, with the lifestyles that we live, people will skip meals or buy food on the go, or when it comes to women and they're trying to restrict, they try to skip during the day and then save up their calories and binge at night. And it's just like, you're never going to get to a place where you've got a good relationship with food or your body if that's, like, the approach that you have.
Yeah.
So focus less on counting calories and focus on, like, giving your body what it needs.
I always advise people who literally have no idea about what is in food for just a couple of days to count.
Yeah.
Like, just so you can see on average what it is that you're consuming and have some basic understanding of, well, how much protein is in this particular meal? What about the carbs? What about the fats? Because most of the time, when they do that, and they do, like, a food log for a couple of days, they'll notice patterns and trends. Probably the protein is really low. Most of the time it is pretty low. And then the fats or the carbs tends to be, like, quite high. And then either the total calorie intake is either higher than they expected, or it's just lower than it should be.
Yeah.
So then when they've done that little exercise, then they'll understand, okay, well, I need to eat a bit more of this, a bit less of this, and then they can make those changes to optimize their macronutrient ratios. And then doing that over time should at least help to change their body composition or even change their mood, energy levels.
I think that is a really helpful practice, and it's something that I do at most of my clients as well, because I don't think that, like, a lot of us are very kind of cognizant of what we're eating every day. And I know, like, if I go through a busy week, like, I will be that person who's not had enough protein or enough colorful foods. And if I analyze my diet at the end of the week, I'll be, like, embarrassed as a nutritionist. But that's just life sometimes. And I think, but if that's what you're doing every day and you're kind of putting your head in the sand and not really caring about what your diet is, yet you're having all these symptoms or you're not progressing in the gym or whatever your goals are, you have to kind of go back and be a little bit more granular and just kind of look, right, what am I actually eating and am I actually getting what I need?
Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the worst trends in the fitness industry right now?
Well, you mentioned the weight loss medication, which is, I'm not even going to call it a trend. It's like, just so incredibly harmful. But I also see, like, a lot of PTs jumping on that trend to say, oh my God, weight loss injections or pills, like, they're the worst thing ever and the medical kind of establishment is completely like bonkers for having this. Mm-hmm. When it does save some people's lives, it does really help turn their lives around. So I think like that needs to be taken into consideration. But me saying this is not saying that I think like anyone who needs to lose weight should be using those things. Like it's so specific and mm-hmm. needs to be done with a healthcare professional. I think also like obviously I'm kind of in the women's health space. So a lot of the things that come to me will be around like hormone balancing. There's a lot of chat around like eat this to balance your hormones. Like your hormones are constantly in flux. So you can't really balance your hormones. Like a green smoothie is not going to balance your hormones. Mm-hmm. Can you eat and live in a certain way that will support your hormone health? Yeah, absolutely. But I think like I see a lot of like what I eat in a day to balance my hormones or like hormone balancing smoothie. And I'm just like, oh, gosh.
The worst thing is when someone has gained a big following, whether they're male or females, and they start preaching some pretty ridiculous things with like no backing.
Give me no an scientific
example. Oh, just saying not to eat certain foods, whatever it might be. And the audience is just like, okay, well, I'm not going to do that because this certain person has said that.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's ingrained in their mind because this one person has said it when, you know, they don't necessarily have the authority to say it or they've just read one study which yeah. has, you know, nothing to do with all other studies that are out there.
That's it. And I think like a little bit of knowledge can actually be incredibly problematic because people assume that they've got loads of knowledge when they know a tiny bit. And oftentimes I get like people in my comment section who will like just have a problem with something that's been in the video or some kind of food, like either a processed food is in the video and then therefore I'm like toxic and harming my audience by having that, or and by processed food I mean like a pot of yogurt or something, like, or the fact that there is like animal products, then I'm like therefore harming people and harming the planet. And I think like diets have become so like polarizing and like people troll you based on like what you eat and what you do if it's not in line with their views or their values.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
What do you have a particular approach when it comes to supplements or any recommendations?
I don't. I'm very much like food first and then just like add in supplements as you need. Like in the UK during the winter months, we should be taking vitamin D. That's like the kind of one blanket rule for everyone. Then on top of that, it really depends. Like when I'm working with clients, it depends on their needs. Like if they don't consume oily fish, for example, and they're female, I always add in an omega-3 supplement. Or if they have a specific health condition, there may be certain nutrients that they need more of. But for like everyday people, like most people who come to me will be on a list of things and I'm like, we can just get rid of half of this. Like a lot of people take multivitamins. They don't really know why. They tend to just say just in case, or like, I just don't want to get a cold this winter. And I get the kind of thinking around it, but that's not really how they work. And actually vitamins aren't like the same as getting a healthy, balanced diet. So they need to be really like considered and looked at in isolation. But I did my master's thesis on supplementation and try to figure out like why most people take it. And it's because it's just habit. Like a lot of us do it just because we did since we were a child. So we take vitamin C every day now, or because we see it as an insurance policy.
It is weird, the obsession with supplementation.
It like, really
even
is.
Obviously for health and longevity, there's a lot of obsession around it. But also when it comes to the gym, everybody keeps asking me like, what supplements can I take to like make me leaner or make me bigger?
Yeah.
And in reality, the supplementation has like this much effect.
But they probably look at you and they think, right, well, he's got the secret. He's got a secret supplement stash that's going to change me. So what is it?
Yeah.
But they don't want the answer of, oh, it's actually just being really consistent with your diet and exercising X amount per week and like all of the things that require work and energy that isn't going to give you fast results. And supplements aren't going to give you fast results.
It's the sleep, the training, the nutrition, and just how you behave outside of the gym.
Yeah.
So alcohol consumption, stress, things like that. That's going to have the biggest impact on the results, which you're going to see.
Yeah.
Of course, with the consistency as well. The supplements, like protein powder, yes, that can help you to achieve your protein targets, but I would always prioritize getting protein from whole foods.
Yeah.
And then creatine, yes, creatine can help you get a little bit stronger, help you to retain more water so you can look fuller. And then that's pretty much it. I'm not a big believer in pre-workouts because I just think they're full of all these crap ingredients.
Yeah.
And often, a lot of the time, I've noticed if you have a pre-workout, it can get you very stimulated and maybe it can improve your performance in the gym and wake you up. But what you really need as soon as the gym workout's finished is for you to go into this very calm and relaxed, like parasympathetic state where your body can start rebuilding and recovering. Mm-hmm. But with the pre-workouts, your body's still in that fight or flight mode for an extended period of time after that workout.
Yeah.
So it's the recovery process is delayed. And then if you're doing this every single day, you're eating into this recovery period. And also, I mean, not to mention the effect it's going to have on your blood pressure. And for me, I notice whenever I have a strong pre-workout, I can't even fall asleep properly at night.
Yeah, because the amount of caffeine in them is like huge, like in a kind of like
it's
monster.
It's like 300 milligrams.
It's insane. And like, I don't think people factor that in on top of like the coffees that they have per day and like any other stimulants they've had. They're probably like doubling the amount of caffeine that's safe in a day. Like I used to do CrossFit like a long time ago before my hospital shift. So I'd be up at 5 a.m. and I'd have a coffee and then I'd have a knocko and then I'd go and have another coffee and work, probably have a coffee like if I'm working a late shift. And the amount that you'd consume, but like in that CrossFit environment, like everyone's taking supplements, like everyone loves coffee. And it's just like everyone's so stressed doing these really stressful workouts. And I think at that point in my life, I probably wasn't very healthy because I was just like so stimulated by workouts and WODs and caffeine. So I think like, I mean, when it comes to like the science, caffeine's incredibly potent and it's a great way to focus your attention and a good pre-workout. But instead of having like a double dose in a can of pre-workout, just have a coffee. Like have it 30 minutes before you train. That's going to be sufficient time to get it into your bloodstream and it's going to wear off quicker than you having like 300 milligrams of caffeine and beta-alanine and whatever else into your bloodstream.
I think as well, if you are feeling like crap and you're exhausted before your workout, then ask yourself, why do you feel like that?
Yeah.
Like something's not adding up. Most of the time, people aren't sleeping enough. But then there's a lot of people who are overtraining.
Yeah.
And I think people don't understand that, especially guys, if they're going to the gym and they really are pushing themselves on a frequent basis to failure in a lot of the sets, that is often sufficient enough to stimulate muscle growth.
Mm.
And then the following day, you should really be prioritizing recovery. So you can rebuild the muscle tissue. And I used to fall into that trap before where I thought more was better. So training more would equal more growth. But there's like a fine line where you kind of get the optimal amount of volume. And then after that, you actually get diminishing returns. And I think for somebody who's been training for a while, actually, even if they're a beginner, if you just go to the gym like 4 times per week and you make those sessions count, like you train hard and you've mastered your form, and there's sufficient overload, like that is enough.
Yeah.
Like you're going to see growth. I think the issue I had is like, I don't like doing nothing.
Mm.
Like I don't like the idea of a rest day.
Yeah.
But like I like to do something and I enjoy going to the gym. So I'll just go to the gym because I enjoy it. But I was actually sort of, you could tell the quality of my workouts were getting worse because I was doing it too much.
Mm.
So there's kind of other things which I'm doing now where it's focused on like active recovery. So I'm doing a lot of walking because that still allows me to burn calories so I can eat more food, but also doing more stretching and mobility work because I am getting a little bit older now and it's definitely...
it's important.
I'm just noticing little things. So I'm doing it for injury prevention, but also like I would be walking and then my hip was like clicking. So it was called, I think, snapping hip syndrome. And I think there was my hip mobility on the left was so poor, especially in comparison to the right side, that I just wasn't able to function properly. And imagine like doing squats and one side is much tighter than the other. then one side of my body's taking more of that resistance, and then you end up with this like crazy imbalance.
So
that's something which I'm focusing more on now, because realistically I want to be able to train for as long as I possibly can do, and be healthy for as long as I possibly can do. So I'm being very careful with the way I train. I'm not doing any like silly one rep maxes or three rep maxes. Everything's very slow, under control, a lot of priority and emphasis on recovery, and of course with nutrition and supplementation as well.
And I mean, that's the thing, like, that's the end goal, isn't it? That you're you stay as active for as long as possible and are fully able to partake in life. Because if like you're just so focused on the short-term goal, which is like, I don't know, get as big as possible, like that's not going to lend itself to like compound benefits in the future, where you're like 60 years of age and you want to be able to like bend down, pick up your grandkids, or just like go play golf or whatever it is that you want to do.
I know some guys that can't even they can't rotate their shoulders properly. Like, that's as far back as their shoulders will go. They can't externally rotate back here and hold the barbell on the back. Like, I'm like, how can you not do that and call yourself an athlete?
Yeah, that blows my mind. Yeah, that's the thing. And I think, I don't know, maybe it's just like a journey that everyone in who first gets into health and fitness goes through. Like, in the beginning, you go through like this newbie stage where you're like, this is amazing, I'm getting loads of gains, I'm going to train every day. And then you get to a point where you're like, oh, that's, I'm like not really recovering, I've constantly got DOMS, I'm not making the progress, I've plateaued. And then you kind of come to this realization, actually, I can make gains and only train four times a week, but make sure they're good quality sessions, make sure I'm getting in cardio, make sure I'm getting in my mobility, and also realizing that nutrition and sleep actually enhance your performance in the gym as well. So I think, like, because my experience would be similar to you, where like you went through that like training every day, twice a day if I needed to, and then now I'm a bit more flexible, but actually I've probably made more progress in the last 3 years than I did the first 5 years that I was training.
It's so funny because I train less and my body composition has stayed the same. Like, I haven't lost muscle. And if anything, my strength has gone up and my performance in the gym has gone up. So it just makes sense. But I mean, I think when you are in your 20s, you can get away with doing more. Like, you can even just walk into the gym, not even warm up, and just start lifting, which is what I did. And I was fine. But then you have that attitude and approach in your late 20s, early 30s, and you're going to have some problems.
I have found that as well. I'm in my 30s and I think, like, you know, once upon a time, you'd do like a one rep max and then you'd finish your set and then you'd be done and you'd leave the gym. And like, there'd be no stretching afterwards. Whereas now I'm like, I need to give myself that like time after the gym to come back down to de-stress. And even what, like, running's huge now, like in London, I'm sure it is in Dubai. I've did the New York Marathon just recently, and like my recovery from that, it was in November.
Well,
and
how
I'm
many
still recovering.
Kilometers is that?
42.2 It's so long.
Did you prepare for it?
Yeah, I did. I did. And it was my first marathon and I got sub-4, so I was like really happy with that. But I found like training is harder now that I'm 33 now than what it was 3 years ago. Like, how I'd recover afterwards. Like, how my knees feel afterwards, which I hate to say. So now my progress, my kind of focus in the gym is like, how can I stay as mobile as possible, as strong as possible, as fit as possible? Like, I want to be fitter in my 30s than I was in my 20s. I think that's possible. I think, yeah, but I think you have to be smarter about it. Like, you can't be having big nights out anymore and then expecting to just get up and train in the morning.
What is your training, like an average week, look like for you?
I do three strength sessions per week and then three runs per week, like a interval tempo run, a long run and an easy run.
Because so you enjoy running.
I was meant to be doing the LA Marathon in March, but I'm not now because of an injury.
Injury from running.
Which is, I had my MRI, I'm all clear, but I'm doing a half marathon, so that's what I'm training for now. But I don't know, I like the idea of being able to be like strong and fit. Like, I don't
like
wanna,
a hybrid athlete.
Yeah, but I cringe calling myself that. I don't think I'm on athlete status, but I like, you know, tomorrow I'm going for a run with my friend. I like being able for someone to say, do you want to jump in on this workout? Do you want to jump in on this run? And for me to just be like, yeah, and not have to think about it. Because when I was in my early 20s, I would have been far too unfit and unhealthy to say yeah. Mm. So now I'm like a lot more energized and I get a lot more out of life.
You should write a new book called Hybrid Athlete.
Oh my God.
I did a run with a group of people in Dubai. It was end of last year. It was 5K and I don't run often. I prefer, if I'm doing cardio, it's either low intensity or like high intensity.
Yeah.
So I did it. And I think I did it in 23 minutes, which was all right. But for the whole week afterwards, like my, especially my calves, they were absolutely destroyed.
Yeah.
And it was even just running, because obviously I've got like a quite big chest. And I'd noticed like it was...
Humble brag.
It was really uncomfortable.
Yeah. I don't relate. But I do think like if you're new to running, it will, like your body will feel a world of pain afterwards. But has it inspired you to want to continue running?
I liked how it made me feel afterwards, because I guess that's whenever you do something you don't want to do and you don't really enjoy. I mean, halfway through, I was really struggling, thinking, oh my God, this... The first half was fine and then I hit a wall and I had to keep going. So it was a bit of a, for me, a bit of a mental battle. But then afterwards, I felt great. The only problem I have with running is, and this I say to a lot of people who ask for my advice, if your goal is to be as big as possible, maximize the amount of muscle mass you can gain, you have to be careful with how often you want to do the running.
Mm.
Because the running is going to impact your recovery. But because of the style of exercise it is, to have a lot of muscle mass and be efficient at running, it doesn't go hand in hand. They're conflicting.
Like, yeah.
That's why you see those that are really good at running, the really efficient runners.
Very slight.
They're slim. And the... Obviously, the bigger guys, they tend to run less, because that's kind of just the way it is. Of course, if you're enhanced, then the rules don't necessarily apply.
Yeah.
But for those people that really enjoy running, I say, well, still run.
Like, yeah.
I wouldn't want you to stop doing something you enjoy doing. But don't be so stressed out and annoyed because you're not as big as you want to be. Like, that's just kind of... the price you have to pay. Or if you really want to continue to add size, you're just gonna have to eat more.
You do have to eat more. Yeah, for sure. I do find, I think, like, if you're just doing random short runs here and there, like 5Ks, 10Ks, I personally don't think that will impact like your ability to build and maintain muscle in the gym. When you get to like half marathon or you're training for a marathon, like that's when things get really hard, because you're running for longer than an hour. You're having to take a lot of like carbohydrate foods on board, which means you shove out a lot of high protein foods out of your diet naturally. And I think just the amount of calories you burn through, like speaking from experience training for that last marathon, I felt like I was adamant I wasn't going to lose muscle, but I did, because it's so hard to even get in your strength sessions because you're still recovering from like the 34K run you had to do 3 days ago.
Mm.
So it is like a really fine balance to get. But I mean,
why did you do it?
I just wanted to run a marathon, to be honest. Strava invited me as well, so I wasn't going to say no.
Okay.
And it was in New York, so I was like, well, if I'm going to run a marathon, I'd rather do it in somewhere amazing like that. Like it was an incredible atmosphere, and there's 50,000 people running with you, and you're going through all the neighborhoods in New York, and everyone's out in the streets, and there's music, and like people are trying to give you cocktails as you're running past. Like it was just like a 4-hour party. So I loved it. But I'm not like, I don't think I really want to do more marathons, maybe, but it depends on where it is. I'd love to do an ultra. Like, I guess what I'm trying to do is prove to myself that I can still get fitter and stronger as I'm getting older.
Mm.
And also I do want to prove to myself that I can maintain that muscle. So I think it's possible. It's definitely harder. You should sign up to a marathon and then document that whole experience of like how you maintain your muscle mass training for a marathon.
I could do. I like to, I like to challenge myself.
Yeah.
And it gives you something to talk about. It's like a journey. It's a process. And I mean, I haven't really strayed too far out of the weightlifting world for the past 15 years. That's primarily what I've been doing. So it could be interesting for sure. I mean, there's even, you know, I've thought about having a fight and then prepping for a fight, lead up to a fight. Like that could be really cool. But then I don't really want to get my face smashed in or like cause any mental damage.
That's
and I just think like, is there really, what is the return on investment in this kind of thing?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't really make much sense.
No, I don't think so. I do think like...
And I've competed twice before. So I've done the whole, you know, the fat loss looking as big and shredded as possible, which was, I enjoyed that because it was very difficult. Mostly the calorie restriction towards the end. That sucks. And you don't really know, you think you know what hunger is, but until you've done a competition and you've gone through the final few weeks of trying to look as lean as you can possibly look, that sucks.
Yeah, and I can't imagine.
That taught me a lot of discipline, and it was able to put me in a position where I could give people advice or coach others through the same process.
Yeah.
Which was useful at the time when I was a coach.
Yeah, for sure. So now that you've done that, then what are your goals in training?
That's the problem. I don't really have any. It's just to maintain.
Yeah.
Just maintain it. I would say my focus has shifted away from the fitness side of it and is now more on business.
Yeah.
So just focusing on pushing with my career and everything else, because it always was just about the gym and my physique. It was like that for like throughout my 20s. I just thought that the progress I'll make in life and the success that I will have is down to how I look. So I used to just be not obsessed, but I put a lot of time and effort into the way I looked.
Mm.
And then I realized actually this is, maybe if you're like leaner and you look really good, it will help you to get some more followers on social media. But that's not going to help you to grow your business and earn more money necessarily.
Yeah.
And I realized how it was time consuming because I don't like to rush my workouts. So especially in Dubai, or when I was living in London, it would take me like 30 minutes to get to the gym if I was driving or walking.
Mm.
Then I'd be at the gym for an hour, maybe over an hour, and then it'd be another 30 minutes coming back home and then like getting all the food in after the workout and everything. And I realized it was a big chunk of my day. And now as my life has got more hectic, as I'm taking on more things, I've had to, whereas it used to be the number one priority, it's kind of not the priority anymore. But I'm very smart with how I approach it.
Yeah.
So I know how to put in less time and effort, but still get the optimal returns from it.
Do you think you're happier now that you're not as like...
No.
Placing, you don't think
no,
so?
No, because I love training so much.
Yeah.
Lads, I love the gym. I'm annoyed now that sometimes when I have work or things which I need to attend to, I can't do that training session. Or sometimes, say for example, like yesterday... You know, I'd have two podcasts back to back.
Mm.
If I didn't have that, I would have gone to the gym in the morning and absolutely smashed my legs.
Yeah.
But sometimes when I do that and I really push hard in the session, I'm mentally wiped out afterwards.
Yeah.
So I felt like doing something like that would affect my ability to do those two podcasts to my best ability.
Yeah.
So I didn't train.
Yeah, I hear that. I guess what I was like, alluding to is like you said that you placed your like value and ability to like grow business perspective on how you looked, whereas like has your belief system changed around that? Like is your body, or maybe you'll disagree and say, yeah, my body is still my number one business card.
I think it's important to look after yourself and at least like look good and healthy. If you want to progress in your career and business, I think that's important, because if people look at you and you're in shape, then it shows that you have self-discipline and you take care of yourself, and you're probably going to have discipline in other areas of your life. And it's a conversation starter. You know, people be like, I've had it so many times in the past where I've been in shape and people just come up to me and just start talking to me, because they're like, oh wow, what do you do? But the problem with looking too much like a gym bro or being too big is people just assume you're like a bodybuilder guy and that's all you do. So that, for a long period of time, that's all I was labeled as. It's like Mike, the fitness guy, got a great physique. But then if you were to take away the physique, what else has he got going for him? And that's one thing that sort of scared me.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, what if I, for whatever reason, I couldn't train and then I lost my physique? What else has Mike got to offer? And then I realized, fuck, like I don't really have much else going for me. So that's when I started to go into other areas and sort of broaden what I have to offer the world. And I don't know when I kind of made that shift. Maybe it was just a few years ago when I started doing that. And I think, yeah, because I'm 33, I'm getting older. I wouldn't say I've passed my prime, but like the next few years are going to be like the best years, I would say. But then it's going to like very slowly start to creep downhill. And that's when I was thinking, oh, okay, you're not going to look like this forever. So what's the backup?
I think that's a smart decision. Yeah. And it takes the pressure off as well, like for in the future when maybe things will change, like if you have kids or your life changes or your priorities shift, like you're not depending on one thing to like bring in your
income. I don't want to be a 40-year-old guy being like, hey, get this tub of protein, it's really good.
Emaciated and sagging with your skin. But yeah, no, I think like it's a realization that like a lot of people go through, especially if you've built your brand on social media, because that's also like such a, I don't know, like we don't really know what the long-term longevity of social media is. We're like, will it stay the same? Like, will it change? Will, like you see all the time new social media apps or new kind of creators come on, and I've been doing it for 12 years. And so I feel like I'm constantly trying to keep up with how things are growing, but also trying to still grow my career off social media as well. And it's a fine balance, because you have to stay relevant but also not get too bogged down by
that's it's tricky, because you started like me a long time ago to see your popularity rise and then to kind of maintain that relevance is very difficult. You know, without you having to sacrifice your values and then hop on the hype train and maybe potentially get into controversial topics or getting online beef with people.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult.
It is. And I'm not about that. Like, I'm not about the controversial jumping on beef. And I think jumping or getting in beef with people. But I think, like, I know that there's been times where that's been, like, trying to be pushed for me, like, by whoever it is, third parties. Because there's a benefit to your growth if you are controversial. If you do say, like, really catchy sound bites that you know are going to go viral, but then you're going to have to stand up and kind of like back that up. And I see more and more like health professionals do it online. It's just like, oh, I do not want to be known as that person who changes my opinion on things all of the time. Like, if it means, like, I've been on social media for 12 years, my following's, I think, 650,000. It's grown slowly over that time, but steady. Like, it's always been steady growth. I'm very happy with that. Like, I'm very happy to have a sound community, to know what I stand for, to not feel like I need to say things just for the likes.
Oh, take your clothes off.
Take my clothes off, which, you know, I'm happy to say I've never done. I think I would lose my license. But that's the thing. It's either like say something really soundbody or get your kid off. And the alternative is the more boring route, but it's the happier route, I think.
Yeah. It's similar to me. Like my sort of growth has been very steady and consistent. And I think it's better that way. I think if you all of a sudden, like if you just do a couple of viral reels, you know, it's it doesn't really provide you with much authority. So,
yeah, and you get like a random collection of people then.
Yeah,
like, do you ever get trolled or?
No, the only thing I get is just steroid accusations. That's the most common one. And I say this repeatedly, like I've never touched anything. Like that's a personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think for most people, they don't need to be taking steroids to look a certain way. Like if you want an athletic build, low body fat, it's just consistent efforts going to the gym and eating properly.
Yeah.
And you're going to look, you'll be happy with the way you look. You're not going to look like a physique competitor, but you'll look good.
Yeah.
And what was an interesting experience for me was, this is when I was starting the whole process of competing. The first time I did it, I placed third. And like, I looked really good. It was probably the leanest I've ever been in my life. Like it absolutely sucked trying to get to that point, but I got there. And then the second time round, it was the same federation. I think it was the WBFF. And for whatever reason, within that 1 year period, the guys I was competing against were huge. Like just their conditioning, and they had like, you know, 10, 15 kilograms more muscle mass compared to me. And I realized, okay, so if I want to go down the route of competing and bodybuilding, you have to take steroids because you're competing against people who are. You could go down the route of doing like the natural competitions. But first of all, people don't even trust the natural federations because they say, they don't test appropriately. Then secondly, there's not much interest in hyping it because all the best athletes aren't doing natural shows.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's not really any money in it. So that was one of the reasons why I was like, okay, well, I don't want to be in a position where I have to pump myself full of steroids to look a certain way. So I'm not going to go down that route.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing I would get. And because I've said a few times that I haven't taken anything, then people accuse me of being a liar.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing that annoys me the most.
That must be really
I don't mind. If people say like, oh, you take steroids, it's like, okay, well, take it as a compliment.
Yeah.
Anybody who is in decent shape gets that accusation. But it's when people say, oh, you're lying to people.
Yeah.
That's what pisses me off.
Yeah.
And it's annoying because there isn't like a universal test which you can just take. And it's like, okay, this is what you've taken or this is what you haven't taken.
Yeah.
And we're in a weird world now where it's becoming a lot more accepted to do steroids, at least for men, because more men and influencers are, you know, sharing their experience about it and talking about it.
Yeah.
And the audience like loves them for it because they're like, oh my God, like so transparent. Like, I really appreciate that. So you're in a position now where these influencers who are taking steroids and talking about how they've taken steroids are getting more admiration and respect compared to those influencers who've chosen not to take steroids and say, look, I don't want to take steroids. Because everyone just looks at them and be like, you're lying.
Yeah.
It's so weird. But in reality, most influencers and fitness guys who look great, most of them probably are doing something.
Yeah.
Because it's their business.
Yeah.
So there is a large chunk of them talking about it and saying what they have taken, being very transparent. And then there's a few of them who are just either not talking about it or some people are lying.
Yeah.
But then you get the people who have never taken anything, who just got, realistically, they got very good genetics.
Mm.
And that's one of the things I would say that I have been gifted with some very good genetics. And that's one of the reasons why I've followed this path. Because I just went to the gym and like within the first year, 2 years, I looked very different compared to all my friends who I was training with. So I was like, oh, maybe I should do something with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine, like, that would annoy me as well if people just kept saying you're lying. But I guess at some point you just have to like let it go and take it as a compliment.
Yeah. Is there anything you're doing in particular to help with your health and longevity and like biohacking?
Not really. At the moment, I'm not drinking alcohol. I just decided.
Did you used to drink a lot?
I used to drink a lot in uni.
The Irish.
And whenever I'm still like very close with my Irish friends, school friends, and they have hollow legs. So I struggle to keep up. But at the moment, I'm just not drinking and I'm feeling amazing for it. Don't get me wrong, I love a glass of wine, the last couple of years, I've not really been a big drinker, but I just, because work's so busy right now and I'm training quite hard, I was just like, I'm not going to drink. And I'm also been super nerdy with my sleep. I think I've got a Whoop, and I think I've been using it for the last few years, but I used to wear it when I worked in the hospital, and I'd just be constantly red. And now I'm in bed at like 9:30, and I get up at like 7 every morning. I get like really consistent good sleep. I feel terrible talking about that when I speak to anyone who has kids, but I'm just embracing it at this point in my life. Mm-hmm. So right now I've been someone who's gone through that like curve of learning about nutrition and health and thinking I need to take all these fancy supplements, do fancy biohacking, and actually come down the other side and realize the most impactful thing for my health is making sure that I'm getting enough sleep, that I'm not consuming lots of alcohol and lots of caffeine and stimulants, having a relatively minimally processed diet, and making sure that I'm making time for my relationships and social connections, because that's a huge predictor of our health as well. Whereas in my 20s, I was just either studying or working or drinking. I'm not really doing anything like niche or anything like that, bar trying to get some sunlight in the morning, taking magnesium supplements before bed because I find it helpful. Like, that's as niche as I get.
Mm.
How about you?
Well, for me, similar approach. I've noticed even just the past 2 weeks, I haven't been in the sun at all, which is pretty rare for me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm usually in the sun every couple of days. And I noticed that's had an effect on how I feel, and even just my skin. My skin looks worse when it doesn't get exposure to sun. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I left the UK in the first place. The sleep definitely has been something which, I mean, it's you can just tell when you've had over 7 hours of sleep, or even 8, good quality sleep, you feel amazing.
Mm.
And you don't feel like you need the caffeine boost, or like you said, any supplements, because you just feel great anyway. I have the Bionic customized supplement. So I'm actually due a blood test. It's been 4 months now. So I have the blood test and then all the customized supplements put together. And it's quite interesting because they give you a full report.
Mm.
And I always, I play a game with myself where I'm trying to just hit optimal on everything. And it's really hard to be perfectly optimal. Yeah. Even if you're really healthy and you've got a good diet, like there's still going to be things which won't be optimal because maybe your body just doesn't absorb certain vitamins compared to others. Mm. Having a balanced diet, and also the alcohol consumption, I've almost completely cut that out.
Really?
There's every so often, if it's a special occasion, I'll have quite a lot of drinks, but it's just the price I pay the following few days is too high. I have too much going on. Whereas beforehand, I feel like I could shake it off. Like now, I will literally wake up in the worst mood, don't want to talk to anyone, can't train, will make poor choices when it comes to nutrition. Yeah. And even like a few days after, when I go to the gym, my strength is just down.
Yeah. I think like also when you have a Whoop and you see the impact of alcohol on it, you're like, my body metrics are completely skewed. I think that's, it's the recovery for me. And that's probably as well a result of being in your 30s versus in your 20s. Mm-hmm. You can like just get up, get to lectures or get on with your day, go to the gym. Like you can muddle through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have to be, I never drink in the week. And if I am, and if it's on a Saturday night, then I need to not be doing anything on the Sunday morning.
Well, I went to Ibiza and I decided to keep the Whoop on. So I was just curious to see what would happen. And there was some nights where I would come back home and I would sleep. It would probably be like 4 hours of sleep, maybe 5. But the Whoop didn't even detect that I'd been asleep.
Really?
Because the heart rate was still so high.
I
was just like, holy shit, like this, just like a big night out.
Yeah.
And your body is struggling.
Yeah.
And even now, like if I have more than 3 drinks, it has a big impact on the HRV and even the restorative sleep that I get.
Yeah, I'd be the same. It is like, that's the one thing that's like I've really changed since having a Whoop is alcohol. And I'm not ready to like cut it out of my life completely.
I think it's moderation.
It like, is moderation.
Have one, maybe two. But just like leave it at that. Yeah. But some people can't. They can't have that discipline. It's like as soon as they have one, like the floodgates open and it's just like bum, 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 bum.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And I think like a lot of people drink in the week because they're really trying to escape work and how they're feeling. And like, I know that when COVID happened, I was working as COVID doctor. And I think when we all went into lockdown, it was like, in the beginning, we didn't know how long it was going to be. And like, people were like, you know, stockpiling and everything. And it was like a bit of a joke that you're like drinking wine at home in the day. I was like working on a COVID ward. But then when I come home, I'd have a glass of wine to like unwind. I don't even know if it was doing that. It was just like the psychological phenomenon of just having a glass of wine.
Then it becomes a habit.
Then it became a habit. And I was like, and then I didn't drink for 90 days because I was like, I need to break this habit. But because that was such a stressful period, I was like using alcohol for that reason. And that's when things get like problematic. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people, you know, even people that I speak to from a client point of view, because they're stressed, they don't realize how much alcohol they're using to kind of get through the week. And then they're drinking more on the weekends because they really want to make the most of the weekend and have a really fun time because they've had such a crap week.
Mm. I think the most difficult thing is when everybody in your friendship group drinks. That's tricky. Like, yeah. To the point where I actually had to change the people I was hanging out with because I was getting so pressured into drinking every time I'd go out with them.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't do this anymore. And they would all be on this level where they're all drunk. And then it just gets a bit annoying being surrounded by drunk people.
It can be. And I think you have to be around the right people. Like, I went out with my Irish friends in Manchester last weekend and I didn't drink and everyone else did. And I caught up late with them because I'd been working that day. But because I've grown up with them, they're not the type to pressurize me. I still went out to karaoke, had a great time, went home with them. But there will be certain people that I couldn't do that with because they would be like pestering me, like, oh, you're not fun because you're not drinking.
Yeah. It's just such like, an insult.
We're not 15 anymore.
You being sober, you're not fun. You're boring. You're like, oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not entertaining enough in my sober state.
That's it. But I think one of the things that like deters me most from alcohol is if I've got something the next day. So I've like booked in a run or a workout class or I've got work or whatever it is. I think if you're someone who's really struggling to break the alcohol cycle on the weekend, like book something on Sunday, like book in a session and it will naturally make you drink less and you will then get up and have a productive Sunday and make the most of your weekend.
Well, even doing this morning stopped me from going out last night. I got invited out and I was like, gotta work.
And now you can go train legs that you didn't train this week and just have a chill rest of the day. Yeah.
You do, if you do get in a good routine of going to bed a little bit earlier, waking up earlier, you definitely get more done.
You do.
Like I am more productive in a morning and particularly I like it because I'm in Dubai most of the time, so I'm 4 hours ahead of the UK. If I wake up earlier in Dubai, nobody bothers me because nobody's awake.
Yeah.
So I can just
get on,
get my stuff done. And having a strict sleep routine where you go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time is probably one of the best things you can do to improve your quality of sleep and duration.
Yeah, that's it. But most people don't do that. Mm. I think not many people want to believe that that's a really transformative thing, like sleep, but it has like so many knock-on effects to like growth hormones, so your muscle building potential. And like, that's something that people are skipping out on because they're scrolling late at night and then they are not having consistent bedtimes throughout the week and just having rubbish sleep. So
like you would get more effective fat loss if you were to get 2 hours more sleep than say, for example, cutting like 500 calories. Like it's ridiculous. I've noticed when I look in the mirror after I've had a bad night's sleep, I just look more watery, and my ability to have like a better pump in the workout is drastically impacted.
Yeah.
Whereas sometimes when I've had like 7 to 8 hours sleep, you just everything's tighter, and like everything feels like full.
Yeah.
And then your workout is just amazing.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Because sleep is not like passive. You don't just go to sleep and like switch off. Like your body's working in the background to get everything primed. And like if you aren't sleeping or you've got some sleep loss, your cortisol is going to be higher. You're going to feel more stressed. Your ghrelin, your hunger hormone, is going to be higher. So you're going to eat more. You're probably going to opt for high sugar foods that give you quick energy. Mm-hmm. Then you already are on the start of like a bit of a bad day because you're not fueling yourself correctly. You're relying on caffeine to get yourself through. You're a bit irritable because also you've not got the sleep that's going to like help you feel rested and like make you feel like emotionally supportive. I think that Matthew Walker, who wrote the book on sleep, is it How We Sleep, Why We Sleep?
Why We Sleep.
Why We Sleep. He called REM sleep emotional first aid. And so like if you're not getting that,
I'm in a bad mood.
Then you are so in such a bad mood. And I think once he said that, I was like, this explains everything. This is why I'm so grumpy after a night out, or if I've worked late or stayed up on my phone late, because your body's not being able to like get back down into that like calm, restorative space.
It's almost like if you get really bad REM sleep, you wake up with a bit of a headache.
Yeah.
It's like you've not been able to flush out all the, whatever it is. I don't, toxins maybe isn't the right word, but just flush your brain out of all the things that it doesn't need anymore.
Yeah.
What do you spend most of your time doing throughout the week? Like, how's the business life?
So Mondays I write a secret project.
New book. Hybrid athlete.
Hybrid athlete, new book. Tuesdays I do like meetings, and I have a membership, so I do a membership admin day. In the membership, it's like nutrition, movement, articles and webinars. So it's kind of like...
Is this on like an online community?
Online community. Wednesdays I do content, Thursdays I do clinic, and then Fridays I do clinic admin and also secret project number 4.
Saturday podcasts.
Saturday podcasts. Saturday and Sundays I try not to work. Like I'm no longer in the NHS, and when I was, I would never have free weekends because I'd be working on my side hustle on the weekends, and I just never had a life. So I feel like I'm now getting a life for the first time in my life. So I'm really strict to not really do much work on the weekends. Sometimes I like on a Sunday to do a little bit of like planning for the week, so I feel more organized. But
it sounds like you've got that's a solid routine.
Yeah,
I think just sticking to those days where you specialize in just doing one thing, that's definitely something I need to get better at, because there's all these things which I need to do to oversee, and the content which needs to be created. If I don't assign time during the week to focus on those things,
it won't happen.
Then I'm like, oh crap, I have no content for like my app page this week.
That's it. Like it's been game changing theming my days and then blocking that out. Because I would just get really stressed trying to squeeze everything in. And then like, I know exactly what I'm doing on that day, because we lose so much time like task switching between things. Like I'd be writing something and then I'd have my email app open or Slack, and then I'm like, oh, then WhatsApp. And then I write down like 2 words and it's already lunchtime. So I'm like, oh, completely wasted today, but I answered 10 emails. So now I only do email blocks because it just saves so much time.
Yeah. Amazing. I've enjoyed that conversation. Where can people find more about you?
Instagram, TikTok, and I've got a podcast and website, and it's really easy to find. I'm under the Food Medic handle, or you can search my name, Dr. Hazel. And I always forget to mention, I have books as well. No hybrid athlete books, but I've got 3 books, The Food Medic, The Food Medic for Life, which are nutrition books. And then my most recent book was The Female Factor, all on Amazon.
That's impressive. 3 books. I need to step my game up. Just need to figure out what I'm going to write a book about.
Hybrid athlete. Bodybuilder runs marathon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.